Morning once again. Good to be with you today. We are going to continue in a study that we've been doing over the last few weeks. We've done this about every 3 or 4 weeks where we're looking at the books of Ezra and Nehemiah. This will be the third lesson in that series in the book of Ezra. And so those of you that are visiting with us, you're going to have to jump right here in the middle of this. But just a little bit of background. In returning to this series, what we see is that there are these Jews who have returned from captivity and have begun rebuilding the temple of God in Jerusalem. And as you might expect, this is not an easy task. And returning and rebuilding and restoration is going to be something that's going to face opposition. And from this point in the story that we're picking up today, right through to the end of the book of Nehemiah, you're going to see there's going to be ongoing obstacles and ongoing opposition. But let's just review a little bit. So after 70 years in captivity, we see that the exiles were allowed to return and rebuild. And they safely made the trip. They settled into their old towns in Judah. And the first thing they rebuilt, as we talked about last time, was the altar of God, which allowed them to offer sacrifices and to celebrate feasts that God had commanded them to keep. And after the altar was built, they turned their attention to rebuilding the foundation of the temple. And as we saw last time, when they did this, they worshiped God, and you remember what we talked about last time. Some rejoiced. They made a lot of noise and shouting. Others who had seen the temple, former temple, wept. And the sound of the joy and the weeping created so much noise that the sound was heard far away. And so you wonder, what did the inhabitants of this region think about this noise and think about these developments? And that's kind of where we ended last time and want to resume that. So Ezra 3 really, to me, ends on kind of a high note where the people rise up, and even though that they are afraid and have this task in front of them, they're starting to rebuild. They're starting to lay the foundation of the temple, and the work is underway. And when you get going, especially with you are imploring God for help by worshiping Him and going forward in the work, you really want that to be smooth. You want smooth sailing going forward, and would really hope for that. But that's really not going to be the case here for these people who, as you recall, we talked about in the first lesson, hey, they really sacrificed a lot. And the first part of Ezra chapter 2, gives a list of those that wanted to go. And so really it honored those who put this task before them and went to do this great job of rebuilding the temple. So we're going to call this today Rise of the Resistance. And so because the resistance is rising here. And in this lesson, you can see that this resistance in doing the work of the Lord, or that this resistance is there to keep people from doing what need to be done. And so let's look here at the first part of this chapter 4, verses 1 through 3. Now when the adversaries of Judah and Benjamin heard that the returned exiles were building a temple to the Lord, the God of Israel, they approached Zerubbabel and the heads of the fathers' houses and said to them, "Let us build with you, for we worship your God as you do, and we have been sacrificing to him ever since the days of Esarhaddon, king of Assyria, who brought us here." But Zerubbabel, Jeshua, and the rest of the heads of the fathers' houses in Israel said to them, "You have nothing to do with us in building a house to our God, but we alone will build to the Lord, the God of Israel, as King Cyrus, the king of Persia, has commanded us." So very, very interesting development here. And so why am I calling this a resistance? This doesn't seem to be a resistance at all. There's a bunch of people in the land, and And they come to Zerubbabel and the heads of the families asking, yeah, we want to help you. We want to help. We want to help you build the temple because, you know, we're the same as you. We honor your God and seek and worship the same God as you. So this all sounds great, doesn't it? To have more help building the temple. How often would we turn down help? You know, especially you think about the kind of labor that this is going to involve. It's going to be difficult. But you notice the responses here of people of God, Zerubbabel, Joshua, and the heads of the families in verse 3. You have no part of this. You have no part in this work. We alone will build to the Lord. So it just begs the question of why? Why would you turn down this help? And so let's look at this a little more closely because I think it's easy to overlook or downplay this description of this encounter and this reaction. Again, it's a big job ahead of them. And I would think, well, I want all the help I can get. But here's some key words. It says, you know, let us build with you, for we worship your God as you do, and we have been sacrificing to him ever since the days of Esarhaddon, king of Assyria, who brought us here. So we're like you. We seek your God. But who are these people? Who are they? Well, the people that are here, they are a mixture of Assyrians and Jews, so you know, akin to the Samaritans that we see in the New Testament, who are many times in conflict with Jews during the time of Jesus. So when the Assyrians took over the northern kingdom of Israel, they took some Jews away and they brought some Assyrians into the land of north of Jerusalem. And as happened many times in the history of God's people, these people intermingled and they intermarried with the Assyrians and they lost their pure Jewish heredity. And so there's this intermixing, but you know, more dangerous and more damaging than them intermarrying, it's the spiritual intermixing. You know, so what always happened when God's people intermixed with others in history? They became like them. And you know, they started, you know, serving the false gods. And so, you know, these people who wanted to help had been they said, we will be sacrificing, but what else have they been doing? Have they been exclusively sacrificing to God? No, that's not the history of these people. And so, had Zerubbabel allowed these people to join in the rebuilding project, what would that have done to the people? Would there be a danger there? And so, probably very wise here to say, nope, you know, thanks, but no thanks, because this is going to compromise the identity and integrity of God's people on this important mission. And so that's why, well, you kind of, at first glance, you get, yeah, that's kind of uncomfortable. And you know, it's just this clear but uncomfortable, we don't want your help. And so how did the group offering their services respond to this rejection? And so that's what you're going to see going forward. And that's a very important question because as we go through Ezra and Nehemiah, we are going to see times when the surrounding people are helping and times when they are not helping and not allowed to help. So what's going on? So you may remember back in 2 Kings chapter 17, that you see that the king of Assyria removing the northern nation Israel from the land and then moving people from other nations into the land. And these people were given directions on fearing the Lord. But it does not turn out the way that we would want it to. 2 Kings chapter 17, verses 33 and 34. So they feared the Lord, but also served their own gods, lowercase g, after the manner of the nations from among whom they had been carried away. So you see what happened there? The intermixing. It says that they feared the Lord, but you could say they kind of feared the Lord. If they really feared the Lord, you wouldn't have this next phrase, would you? But they feared the Lord, but they also served their own gods after the manner of the nations from among whom they had been carried away. To this day they do according to the former manner. They do not fear the Lord, and they do not follow the statutes or the rules or the law or the commandment that the Lord commanded the children of Jacob, whom He named Israel. And so you see what happened here. That there was a problem here, and the problem is very hard to misunderstand here. It's very clearly stated what the issue is. That they seem to fear the Lord, but they don't really. They really do not fear the Lord. They just, you know, we're going to serve the Lord, but we're going to add to our worship and we're going to serve other gods. And so they're not really for the Lord, but you know, they're kind of looking like it a little bit. And so you can see why this offer of these inhabitants of the land who had a history of serving other gods, when they come up and say, "Oh yeah, we're just like you. We serve your God." Yeah, maybe not. Maybe you don't serve Him the same way that we do. And so you need to see that there will be those who kind of look the part and say the right things, but they are actually enemies of the work. And so we see some examples of warnings of this in the New Testament. In Acts chapter 20, verse 29, Paul is speaking to the Ephesian elders and he warns them. He says, "I know that after my departure, fierce wolves will come in among you, not sparing the flock." And in our Bible classes, in Romans and in Galatians, which we have been studying, we see that very thing happening, don't we? What Paul said was going to happen is happening, that there are those that have come in and are Judaizing teachers and trying to teach you to keep the old law. And Paul saying that that's going to happen. And so warnings about those among the flock who would be wolves. Also in Romans chapter 16, Paul warned about those who would cause divisions and create obstacles. Romans 16 verse 17, "I appeal to you, brothers, to watch out for those who cause divisions and create obstacles contrary to the doctrine that you have been taught. Avoid them." In Philippians chapter 3 verse 18, another warning here. Paul warns about those who are enemies of the cross of Christ. Philippians 3:18. "For many of whom I have often told you, now tell you even with tears, walk as enemies of the cross of Christ." And Rex this morning read for us in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verses 6 through 14. We won't reread that, but if you're paying attention to that reading this morning, Paul was given instructions on how to deal with those who did not walk as God instructed, and the discipline that needed to take place. Many years ago, when I was, you know, just a youngster, the congregation that we were attending, that we had elders there, and there was a man that came in among us, and he had a reputation for believing some things that were false. And I won't go into what all those things were, but the things that he believed, it probably would not cause a problem in what was practiced there among the group, unless he was going to make an issue out of them. And so the elders took him aside and talked to him, and he said, "Yes, I believe these things." He said, "But I'll never teach them. I want to be a part of this group, and I want to be, you know, peaceful with everybody, and I will not. I promise you, I'm not going to try to, you know, force my opinion on these things, because they were just opinions, and it really didn't factor into how the brethren were going to work together. And you know what? You know, he did end up worshiping with us, and he changed his mind after a while. You know, through some study. But the reason I bring that up is because I think it was very good for the elders there to recognize that this could be a wolf. This could be somebody that could cause a problem. And so there was a clear understanding with this gentleman that, hey, you know, we want to work with you, we want to study with you, but, you know, we could have a little issue here. And so there was a clear understanding there, and it all worked out good. But it doesn't always. You know, there could have been a problem down the road that as Paul said here in Thessalonians, you've got to deal with that issue. You've got to deal with these divisive brethren. You've got to deal with those that are teaching false things. And the point that I'm trying to make here is just because someone says, oh, I want to join you, there might be some reasons to have a discussion about that. And here, in Ezra, you've got these people that, at first glance, we're so surprised when you look at this. Oh, we want to help you. We need some strong guys here to help us. And that would probably be most people's reaction to that is, you know, we don't have a lot of people, and we sure would like to have you. But those that had a little bit of insight said, maybe that's not the best idea. And so the point is that just because someone says the right thing, you have to watch out. And we have example after example of this as Paul warns the brethren, you need to be careful. That there are those that seem to be one thing but are something else. And certainly we see that here in the book of Ezra. And so let's move on here to verses 4 and 5. It says, then the people of the land discouraged the people of Judah and made them afraid to build, and bribed counselors against them to frustrate their purpose all the days of Cyrus, king of Persia, even until the reign of Darius, king of Persia. So there was some resistance here that people were going to discourage them and make them fearful. And we notice here in verse 4 that you know, these people were discouraged from doing the work, made them afraid to build. And so the people here were doing everything that they could to frustrate the plans. And you can imagine, you know, what that would look like. That, oh, you can't do this. You don't have enough money. You don't have enough people to do this. You had people that wanted to help you. You turned that down. The work is too great. Have you ever had people try to discourage you in that way? It happens all the time. Oh, there's no way that you can do that. The work will be too hard. You will not succeed. You might as well go ahead and quit now and not get frustrated. So all kinds of ways that people can hurl discouragement so that people are demoralized and stop doing the work. Just plant seeds of doubt. And this is what it says the surrounding people are doing. And notice here in verse 5, it says this discouragement and fear didn't just go on for a little while. It says, bribe counselors against them, frustrate their purposes all the days of Cyrus, king of Persia, even till the reign of Darius, king of Persia. So let's talk about here that what this means. That this is happening a long time. To continue during the reign of Darius means that this discouragement was going on for 16 years. The people are going to experience 16 years of people telling them that you can't do it and making them afraid, making them discouraged, and frustrating their plans. And you know, the next part that we see here in the book of Ezra is about to get a little confusing. And you know what happens when you do a verse-by-verse book study is you have to deal with these things that are confusing. So if you're doing a topical study, you can just pick what you want to do. But when you're doing a book study, you either deal with the passages or you do what my dad would say, you observe the Passover and you pass right over it onto something else easier. But it's really not that hard. What we see here in verses 6 to 23 is a parenthetical statement. And so Ezra, when he wrote the book, he put verses 6 through 23 in parentheses. And so what is being described here is, you know, part of this story that's going to happen later. And so in verses 5, 6, and 7, Ezra mentions four different kings of Persia, and he describes how the Jewish remnant faced opposition during all of their reigns. And so this is dealing with a long period of time. Verse 6 says, in the reign of Ahasuerus, in the beginning of his reign, they wrote an accusation against the inhabitants of Judah and Jerusalem. In the days of Artaxerxes, Bishlam and Mithridath and Tabeel and the rest of their associates wrote to Artaxerxes, king of Persia. The letter was written in Aramaic and translated. And so what's being described here is a long, long period of opposition. So you're really doing a time warp here and looking ahead. And so I think it's helpful just to lay out the chronology of the kings of Persia real quick here. So, and this is what happened during their reign. Cyrus was king of Persia from 539 to 530 BC. And Cyrus, you remember, he is the Persian king who allowed the Jews to return. We talked about that in the first lesson. He is the one that told them, go rebuild your temple. And so all the events we've looked at so far have happened under Cyrus. But the next king of Persia is Cyrus's son, Cambyses. And forgive me if I mispronounce him, because I probably am. But he reigned from 530 BC to 521 BC. And during his reign, no progress on the temple during that reign. Then comes Darius, and you're familiar with King Darius. He was king of Persia from 521 to 486. And you know, Darius plays an important role in allowing the temple to be rebuilt. He's also the king that's mentioned heavily in the book of Daniel. And so next comes Xerxes, or Ahasuerus, who reigned from 486 to 465. And he becomes Esther's husband. And so finally, there's Artaxerxes, who reigned from 464 to 423. He is the king who is reigning at the end of the book of Ezra and throughout the book of Nehemiah. And so this is the king that the letter in this parentheses is written to. And so what we see here is the confusing part is that Ezra is using an event in the reign of the last king in the list as an example of the opposition that they're going to be facing for a long time. I hope that makes sense. So the main point that you have to get from this is Ezra is saying this opposition is not just a really time-limited thing. It's going on for a long, long period of time, well over 100 years. And so this is an interesting way, I think, that God is showing us this in this, I'm just going to call it a time warp. And what we notice is that the enemies and accusations of the against the people of Judah and Jerusalem are happening for a long time. But when we get to verse 13, it says, the enemies send a letter to King Artaxerxes declaring that if these people finish their work, what's going to happen if they finish their work? They will not pay tribute, custom, or toil, and the royal revenue will be impaired. So here is more discouragement. And furthermore, in verse 15, it says that they are called a rebellious city. They are hurtful to the kings and provinces, and that sedition was stirred up. This is why the city was laid waste. And so what the enemies are doing now is trying to use the government to put a stop to this. Stop the work that they're doing because they're not going to pay you taxes. Stop the work that they're doing because they're going to be sedition. They're going to stir up trouble. And this is why they've had all these problems in the past. And so they're using the government as an enemy here to threaten the people from doing their work. And the enemies are successful in doing that. In verse 21 says, "Therefore make a decree that these men be made to cease, and that the city not rebuilt until a decree is made by me. And take care not to be slack in this matter. Why should damage grow to the hurt of the king?" And so they said, "Okay, you know, this is bad for you." And he says, "You're right, it's bad for me." And so he makes this decree that everybody's got to stop work. City is not going to be rebuilt unless I change my mind and give a different decree. And so now the government of Persia now stands in the way of this work being completed. And so this is a picture of resistance for sure. And so let's look at the next couple of verses in chapter 4, verses 23 and 24. "Now when the copy of King Artaxerxes' letter was read before Rehum, Shimshai, the scribe, and their companions, they went up in haste to Jerusalem against the Jews, and by force of arms made them cease. Thus the work of the house of God, which is at Jerusalem, ceased, and it was discontinued until the second year of the reign of Darius, king of Persia." And so this final picture that we see here in this resistance is a forceful resistance. It says that the enemies got this letter back from the king. They didn't just tell the workers to stop. It says that they forcibly stopped them. That they used armed force to stop them. New American Standard Version says they stopped them by military force. And so that's the way that the chapter ends, is this stoppage of work on the house of God. It just stopped. And it's going to remain stopped for 16 years. Very sad, isn't it? Because we started out really gung-ho on getting this done. And you've got these people that are enemies of those that are doing the work, that have pulled out all the stops that they can to try to keep this from happening and getting the government involved, which they successfully did. So, what can we learn from that? What's the message of this? What are we supposed to learn? The point is very clear, I believe, that there will always be opposition. Always be opposition. Opposition to the work of the Lord. If we see that in our day, should we be surprised at that? Was there opposition to Jesus? Obviously there was. Opposition to the work of the Lord exists in every generation. We were riding around with Jarrell's mom yesterday, and we driving around some places that she hadn't seen in a while, and she reminiscing about some of the work that Cheryl did and some of the things that he encountered. And I was thinking, as she was saying some of those things, well, that's a blast from the past. You know, because there were different issues in the church that were being encountered at different times. And I was thinking, well, you know, and today it's something different. And every generation, there's new challenges and different things that happen. And here we have a situation where God's people are being discouraged. And we shouldn't be surprised at that, because opposition to the work of the Lord is going to happen in every generation. So what should we do? What should the people do here? Well, we're going to see what they did as we go through these lessons. But, you know, should they stop? We obviously know they didn't. But people sometimes, well, you know, it's just too much trouble. Too much trouble, too much resistance. Maybe things will get easier later. Maybe we just need to wait. Maybe God is telling us something. And we tell ourselves that sometimes. When we receive resistance and discouragement, well, you know, maybe this is not what I'm supposed to be doing. But we shouldn't be surprised at opposition to the work. if we wait for it to get easier, then sometimes that time never comes. And John chapter 15, verse 18, Jesus said near the end of his ministry, "If the world hates you, know that it's hated me before it hated you." Jesus warned his disciples about that you should not expect a different response than the response that I am receiving. If the world hates you, yeah, they hated me first. So there will always be opposition to the work, and you don't allow opposition to stop you from doing the work. Certainly we can see that in the lives of the apostles and those that spread the gospel of Christ. If they had let opposition stop them, if Paul had let opposition stop him, what would he have accomplished? And another important point to learn from this is don't get so discouraged that you think that God has abandoned you. That opposition does not mean that God has abandoned you. Think about what God is doing at this moment in time. He wants His temple built, and we read that in Ezra 1, that He moved the heart of Cyrus. Remember, it wasn't Cyrus that came up with that by himself. He moved the heart of Cyrus to make the decree to go to Jerusalem to build the temple. So are these peoples too strong for God to accomplish His plan? This rise of resistance does not mean that God is not with His people. This rise of resistance does not mean that the people are wrong for trying to do the work and they should just quit. So don't interpret opposition to the work as meaning, well, that's just God's way of telling me I need to quit. You ever seen preachers do that? That brethren have picked on them or been mean to them, and so they, I just can't do this anymore. God is allowing these roadblocks and it's testing their faith. And in every generation, there's going to be times when you experience resistance and discouragement. And here, you know, you've got people that are against you. They get the government involved and you know, they're really at the really having a rough time. But it's a test of faith. And certainly these difficulties in the life of God's people here, very similar to things that went on when Israel was going through the wilderness. It was a test of their faith, and people have great difficulties sometimes in their commitment to Christ with others oppressing them. But how do you deal with that? How do you deal with the resistance? How do you deal with discouragement? How do you deal with wolves in sheep's clothing? You just can't lose sight of the goal. And you have to continue to exercise faith in God. The goal of these people, don't forget, was to build the temple at God's command and that God could have a relationship with His people. And that goal has not changed. There's been a lot here that's happened, but the goal has not changed. And so they need not to lose sight of that. And the work needs to keep going. So for the time being, discouragement has grabbed hold of them and they have stopped building the temple. And we're going to see, you know, what happens next as we continue to go through this. But they need to get over that discouragement and get back to the task at hand. I think there's a great lesson for us as we go through this. If we deal with discouragement, we cannot lose sight of the goal. What is our goal? It's to be more like Jesus Christ. It's to be with Him in heaven for eternity. It's to encourage all others that we can take with us to go to heaven also, to be part of the family of God. Will there be opposition? Yes. But we have to deal with that and keep our eye on the goal and work toward that. I hope this will be an encouragement to you as we study this together. If we can help you in any way, be obedient to the gospel of Christ, we invite you to come while we stand and sing.